Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's a pleasure to have you aboard this edition of Africa Link on Wednesday, May the 23rd. I am Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Please don't hesitate to leave us your comments and share this audio.
Now coming up, a row between Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari and former President Olusegun Obasanjo has gone public, with Buhari accusing Obasanjo of corruption. Obasanjo fired back saying he is ignorant.
Obasanjo wants to put his mouth, or he wants to speak on anything, and he wants to control the people in government position. But I doubt much if he has that capacity to control Buhari.
The winner of this year's German Africa Prize Award has been announced, this time honoring environmentalists.
It's recognition of a lifetime commitment to conservation work, which I'm still involved in long after retirement from public service.
And Germany's Interior Ministry has ordered a branch of its refugee agency to stop processing asylum cases. This is one of Germany's biggest corruption scandals.
We have a lot lined up for you. Stay tuned for this and much more. But first, we start by listening to what has been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. German Interior Minister Horst Seehofer has prohibited the migration office in the city of Bremen from deciding on individual refugee cases after the center had been accused of improperly approving thousands of asylum applications between 2013 and 2016. Seehofer released a statement Wednesday saying that the office had disregarded legal regulations and policies and that confidence in the center had been massively damaged. German prosecutors have launched an investigation into whether or not migration officers granted asylum in exchange for bribes. German Chancellor Angela Merkel is about to begin a visit to China. She is accompanied by a business delegation, and talks with Chinese leaders will include international trade disputes. The trip comes amid tensions with the U.S. over President Donald Trump's so-called trade war and Washington's rejection of the Iran nuclear deal. Merkel said ahead of her trip that she would look to strengthen multilateralism. She's due to meet Chinese President Xi Jinping in Beijing on Thursday. Rwandan President Paul Kagame met with French President Emmanuel Macron in Paris on Wednesday. The two leaders are seeking to improve relations that deteriorated after the 1994 Rwandan genocide. France has denied Rwandan accusations that it supported ethnic Hutu forces, which carried out most of the killings. More than 800,000 lives were lost during the violence, most of them from the Tutsi ethnic group. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. The World Health Organization said Wednesday that efforts to control the outbreak of the deadly Ebola virus faces a critical period, as efforts are ramped up to track down people potentially infected with the disease. Top WHO official Matshidiso Moeti said the organization has been increasing efforts to prevent the spread of Ebola from the Democratic Republic of Congo.
WHO has prioritized 9 countries neighboring the DRC to scale up their preparedness and readiness capacities aimed at ensuring that they can detect, investigate, and manage Ebola should there be any importation of cases to their countries.
Zimbabwe's former President Robert Mugabe failed to heed a summons by Parliament to answer questions over the mismanagement of the country's diamond mining sector, which led to multi-billion dollar losses. DW's Columbus Mafunga has the story from Harare.
Mugabe nationalized diamond mines in 2016, accusing mining companies of failing to account for $15 billion in revenue. The 94-year-old was forced to step down as president in November after 4 decades in power. Global Witness and other corruption watchdogs expressed concern over abuses and mismanagement of Zimbabwe's diamond sector as far back as 2010. It linked state security agencies and Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party elites to corruption in the diamond mining sector.
And finally, the German city of Hamburg has ordered a ban on the use of diesel vehicles in an attempt to improve air quality. Hamburg is the first German city to order such a ban. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link program. I am Zipora Nyambura.
With me, Abubakar Jalo. Welcome to those of you who are following our page at DW Africa. That's on Facebook.
And today we start in Nigeria. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has publicly accused former President Olusegun Obasanjo of wasting the sum of $16 billion on an electricity project. Buhari said Obasanjo bragged that his administration spent the amount on power sector, yet there was nothing to show for the expenditure.
Obasanjo fired back, saying Buhari was not correctly informed and his statement was based on ignorance. He said Buhari was re-echoing an unproven allegation against him by his predecessor Musa Yaradua. Yusuf Bala from DW's Hausa Service joined me earlier in the studio. I started by asking him to describe the conflict between these two leaders.
Well, if you look at what is going on in Nigeria, or if we look at the relationship between Obasanjo and Buhari, one can easily say it is a sour relationship, or it is going bad, or like before. If we took ourselves back to 2015, when Obasanjo totally support Buhari to end the era of PDP.
You just said that Obasanjo supported Buhari in the 2015 elections and now he's pulled his support. What happened? Why is Obasanjo not supporting Buhari anymore?
Well, Buhari, when he came to power in 2015, a lot of people in Nigeria, they have a very good ambition around him. That is, they think things will go well in all sectors. Security, economy, and any other sectors that you may think of. But now, things are not going well. The way Nigerians, both the poor and the elites, are thinking.
There's this accusation, though, that Obasanjo wants to have control of things. And Buhari is basically coming out of the shadow of Obasanjo. Is that the case in this fight?
Yes, if we look at the Obasanjo, the way he is handling Nigeria since 1999 till today, he want to put his mouth or he want to speak on anything and he want to control the people in government position. But I doubt much if he has that capacity to control Buhari. Buhari cannot allow him to do such. So any criticism coming from Obasanjo is like what he used to do in the past. Even during Jonathan era, Obasanjo supported him. After some times he is not dancing to his tune, then he fired back at him. He withdrew his support.
It's hard to determine what political party he's actually in. Is he with PDP or is he with APC?
One cannot say Obasanjo is with PDP or he is with APC, because all he is after, those who are going to dance to his tune.
Is he doing that because he wants meaningful changes in Nigeria? Or is he doing that just because he wants to have control over power in Nigeria?
For me, in my opinion, I think Obasanjo, he is doing all these things for him to have relevance. Any government, he wants this government to go along with him. So that is why he's doing all these things.
Yusuf Bala from DW's Hausa Service.
And we did ask on our Facebook page, how will this political fight end? And Akipe Lukenu says Obasanjo supported Buhari in the last election. Why is he antagonizing him now?
And Jide Ofo says, even if you give Buhari American presidency now, he will still blame Donald Trump.
That's a good one. Elvis Chinaka says, a bad workman always fights with his tools. That is what Buhari is.
Thanks for those responses. We'll try and get to them anytime within the program.
Yeah, and now we come back here where the German Interior Ministry has ordered a halt to the processing of asylum applications at an office of the National Migration Agency.
Now, prosecutors have launched a corruption investigation into the former head of the Bremen office of the Federal Office for Migration, that's BAMF, and several others who allegedly gave improper approval to 1,200 refugee applications between 2013 and 2016. What has the Interior Minister, Minister Horst Seehofer, been saying about this? A question I put to DW's Daniel Pels in Berlin.
The minister said that the trust in the quality of the asylum procedures and the integrity of the so-called Welcome Center in Bremen had been massively damaged because of the affair. And so that's why he had taken this decision to halt the processing of asylum applications in Bremen as a measure to restore public trust. It's important, of course, to keep in mind that this is only a temporary measure. So this is a ban that will stay in place until investigations into the affair at the Bremen office are concluded.
Now, how long did the immigration agency, that's BAMF, know about this and kept it a secret?
Well, the German public learned about the irregularities only in April this year. But according to what we know so far, the ombudsperson at the Federal Office for Migration and Refugees at the central headquarters received an anonymous tip-off about irregularities at the Bremen branch in early 2016. But apparently the scale of the irregularities wasn't clear at that stage. So BAMF launched internal investigations against the then head of the Bremen office, which were concluded in March 2017, and the head of the branch office then was demoted, but stayed on for a couple of months working still at the Bremen branch, and then was only suspended later on. The interesting thing is that several German media outlets reported that in early 2017, a senior official at BAMF headquarters sent some emails to staff saying that they should not check everything in detail. So that creates the impression that it might have been an attempt to cover up the whole thing. The BAMF has very swiftly denied that it was such an attempt to cover up.
And how much has this caused a stir in Berlin?
It has led to quite a stir in Berlin, because it's not the first scandal that BAMF is engulfed in. The Alternative für Deutschland, which is a right-wing political party that has campaigned on a very harsh anti-migration rhetoric, already called for a parliamentary inquiry committee into the whole saga. So pressure both on the Minister of Interior, Horst Seehofer, and the President of BAMF, Jutta Kurt, is extremely high at the moment.
DW's Daniel Pels reporting from Berlin on one of Germany's biggest corruption cases involving asylum seekers. Now back to the African continent. The winner of this year's German Africa Prize has been awarded. They are Tanzania's Gerald Bigurube and Madagascar's Clovis Razafimalala, who have both dedicated their lives to saving their country's natural heritage.
Now, 46-year-old Rafi Mazalala won the prize for his work protecting the virgin forest of his homeland and fighting against illegal logging and trafficking of rosewood and timber, while Bigurube from Tanzania has dedicated to saving Tanzania's wildlife and natural environment, leading the fight against illegal poaching. Listen to what he had to say after the win.
It's recognition of a lifetime commitment to conservation work, which I'm still involved in long after retirement from public. I think this is actually a great way to retire with this kind of recognition. And obviously, I will continue to do what I can to support conservation work, because that has been my lifetime engagement. That is, I don't know anything else better.
Now, Ingo Bodereke, the Secretary General of the German Africa Foundation, says it was high time that they recognize environmentalists who are equally fighting for a great cause in Africa. Take a listen.
This time, an independent jury of 26 experts found that it's time now to give a rise to the voice of those activists and of those people who are actually making a contribution in nature conservation. And this is also due to the fact, because this is the dimension that is often neglected when giving awards and when setting priorities for the African continent. And we believe that it's time to give a voice to those people that are actually working on the forefront to show that an economic development and nature conservation can go hand in hand. And we are very happy that we do this with two countries, Tanzania and Madagascar, which play a crucial role in nature conservation for the continent.
Ingo Bodereke from the German African Foundation. You are listening to Africa Link on DW with me, Abubakar Jalo.
And I am Zipora Nyambura. Just to mention some of your listeners, Erondu Uche and Oscar Chukudu from Nigeria, thank you for listening. We still have a lot still to come. The Fulani herders and farmers conflict in Nigeria and why it's more than just a religious conflict.
Over time, populations have expanded around the areas which the nomadic communities have often moved their cattle across the country. And this goes beyond Nigeria, across the entire Sahelian West African region.
And still to come, we'll also hear about the growing Chinese influence in Africa and how many Africans are scrambling to learn the Chinese language.
Yes, that is surely something you don't want to miss. But first, today is the International Day to End Fistula, one of the worst injuries that mainly occur during childbirth, leaving the tissue between the vagina and the bladder or rectum ruptured. The World Health Organization says more than 2 million women live with the untreated obstetric fistula in the sub-Saharan Africa.
Now, in Uganda, about 75,000 women of reproductive age die of the disease. There are also about 1,900 fresh cases of fistula recorded each year. According to Dr. Olaro Charles from the Ministry of Health, Uganda has produced equipment for facilities and training for surgeons and nurses. They are capable of handling just 1,500 fistula repairs, leaving a huge backlog in communities. Frank Yiga has more from the capital, Kampala.
18-year-old Scovia Birunji is one of the fistula patients in Imbarara Regional Referral Hospital awaiting treatment. She looks frail and is hesitant to talk to me about her condition. Her sister, Teresa Trinamasco, tells me it's because her pain is unbearable.
It's not easy at all. No one wants to come close to her because of the bad smell. She can't control the flow of her urine and feces. When people see flies hovering over her, they are shocked and disgusted. They take it as a bad omen and avoid her. I think she will recover after the operation.
Usually, women with fistula tend to shy away from hospital due to ignorance and fear of being stigmatized. Sister Sarah Nangonzi, a midwife in Masaka Hospital, tells me if women are properly sensitized, such complications would reduce.
Most mothers think they have bewitched us, they are cursed by God. Because the situation they pass through, imagine somebody delivering the first baby and you get it. The husband goes away, the parents have decided to leave you, and now urine is coming, you are smelling like anything, so they become frustrated. So a mother may be there laboring without knowing that she has obstructed, and those people, they will just keep her there.
At Mulago National Referral Hospital, I meet Dr. Susan Obori before she enters the theater room to conduct fistula operation. She tells me it's a serious health complication that requires urgent attention.
There is an injury during birth that causes a communication between the birth canal, urinary bladder, or sometimes the rectum, which results in uncontrolled leaking of urine, sometimes uncontrolled leaking of feces. And it's a very distressing condition, smelling urine and feces all the time. And the commonest cause is a prolonged obstructed labor, where someone tries to deliver and fails to deliver, and the baby's head is stuck in the pelvis. Every woman is at risk, but mainly the young girls who deliver early, and their pelvis is not yet mature enough to take a baby.
In Uganda, it still remains a major public health challenge. However, Dr. Charles Olaro from the Ministry of Health says the numbers of such cases have reduced over the last 10 years due to various government interventions.
A good proportion of women affected by obstetric fistula are not receiving the required fistula treatment. The Ministry of Health, with support from partners, has put in place a number of interventions to address the growing problem of obstetric fistula by commencing a multifaceted fistula management program aimed at prevention, treatment, and rehabilitation of fistula clients.
That is Lararu from Uganda's Ministry of Health. That report was compiled by Frank Yeager.
And a quick recognition from those of you who are listening to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Abdul Ba says, I'm watching or listening live from Guinea. And we have someone here from Sierra Leone, that's Candy Kamara. And we have Solomon Neka from Gabon. Thank you all for your response, for joining Africa Link there.
On the spot.
Now, China's presence in Africa has increased tremendously in the last years. Reports indicate that there are more than a million Chinese people on the continent, mainly labor migrants, business owners, and their families.
In Kenya, where Chinese companies are behind large infrastructure, technology, and telecom projects, you simply can't get around them. Eva DeVries explores how Chinese language schools are springing up from the ground in and around the capital, Nairobi, targeting young Kenyans hoping to increase their chances on the extremely competitive job market.
These children, repeating diligently what the teacher is telling them, are not Chinese. No, they're Kenyan children in a classroom decorated with Chinese lanterns and posters in Riuru, just north of Nairobi. One of the students is 13-year-old Lucia, a girl with a red t-shirt and braided hair, sitting front row, writing in her notebook. She explains why she wants to learn Chinese.
It's an interesting language to learn and fun. When I go to like another country, I can teach other people Chinese, like translate Chinese to other people.
Lucia and her fellow students are between the age of 7 and 13 and have taken up the Chinese course offered by the Riuru Fairview Primary School. Head teacher James, a proud tall man in a brown suit, explains why Chinese, or Mandarin, as the specific language is called, is such an important part of their curriculum. He believes that learning the Asian language will give his pupils a head start.
Right now, the people who are really into this country, doing a lot of things, maybe through the cooperation of both governments, are the Chinese. I'll give an example of Thika Super Highway. It was built by the Chinese government. There are so many Chinese people around. So we need translators. We need people who can talk to one another. And once our children now continue that way, by the time they reach higher levels of learning, they'll be so good in it and they'll fit in the job market in each and every field.
In Nairobi, Chinese courses are on offer to all age groups, even outside the schools. Business people, students, and graduates searching for a job on the competitive job market often sign up for them. Faith Wanjiku fell in love with the Chinese language and culture many years ago.
Oh, ni hao. Ni hao.
I'm Eva.
Okay.
Nice to meet you.
After studying in China for a year, she now speaks the language fluently and established her own institute, the Discovery Chinese Cultural Center. She organizes classes all over the city.
I feel it's the right and the right time for Kenyans to learn Chinese because our government has or is engaging with the Chinese in building infrastructure in Kenya, which is one of the pillars of our Vision 2030 in Kenya.
We're back at the Chinese school, where Faith plays some Chinese kids' music to prepare for her classes. She also underlines the challenges. The arrival of the Chinese creates many opportunities for Kenyans, but it doesn't all come without problems.
Others complain of harsh treatment inside the Chinese companies where they are treated like anything, you know, and there are all those challenges. But at the end of the day, I feel it's a lack of understanding of each other's culture. The Chinese people as well do not understand Kenyans at all.
That is Faith, who is also teaching Chinese in Kenya. That report was compiled by Eva DeVries.
And now a response here from Chineyere Ezeife. He says China is a better friend to the African nation. US and UK and others can give an African nation $1 in the form of aid or assistance with the right hand and collect back millions of dollars back with the left hand.
Dedan Matsimbe says, why worry about them? There are black people owning businesses in China, Korea, Japan. Let the Chinese people be comfortable in Africa too.
And Cuba Solia says, at least China will work and make differences while the West will bring topics of personal fight.
So mixed opinions on that topic.
Indeed.
Koshua Abu.
Yeah.
Living Planet Africa.
Now, let's go back to where we started. That's in Nigeria. Every other day, there is news of fresh attacks in Nigeria's central region. Just last month alone, more than 160 people were reportedly killed in clashes between farmers who are ethnic Christians and herdsmen who are mainly Muslim. But at its core, the conflict isn't about religion.
Yes, it's a battle over resources and livelihoods. The herdsmen need land for their cattle to graze on, but the farmers say they need water and land to grow crops. Desertification has driven herders from the north farther south in search of greener pastures, triggering an escalation in fighting. Stefan Ellert reports from Makurdi in Nigeria's Benue state, and his report is presented by Natalie Muller.
These cows at a market in the central Nigerian town of Makurdi are part of the problem. They belong to nomads who come to this area every year. People here love to eat the cow's meat, but they don't want the animals anywhere near them. Nomadic cattle breeders need water and grass for their livestock, so they send them to graze on local farmland. But that angers farmers, who are using the land and the scarce resources at their disposal to grow crops. The result? Furious protests, brutal clashes, and even murder.
It's about the continuous, reckless murdering of Benue citizens by terrorist Fulani herdsmen.
That's a farmer in Benue State, where 80 people were killed in January, allegedly by Fulani herdsmen, a nomadic, mainly Muslim ethnic tribe from the north. In recent months, a growing number of herdsmen and farmers have taken up arms and formed militias. It's not a local conflict anymore. 17 Nigerian states are affected by the crisis. That's almost half the states in the country. Nigeria's president, Muhammadu Buhari, says the government is taking action.
The federal government is working day and night to ensure peace and stability returns.
But peace and stability haven't returned yet. The director of Amnesty International in Nigeria, Osai Ogio, says she's worried about recent developments in the country.
Now what we're experiencing is a period where we're going very close to anarchy, where people can take the law into their hands in order to settle scores.
The violence is spiralling out of control. Ogio says the conflict isn't just limited to Nigeria. Rapid population growth and climate change have worsened the fight over natural resources.
Over time, populations have expanded around the areas which the nomadic communities have often moved their cattle across the country. And this goes beyond Nigeria, across the entire Sahelian West African region.
During the dry season in Nigeria's north, nomadic herdsmen usually migrate with their animals to more fertile areas, like central Benue State, where their cattle can find grass and water. But Benue's governor, Samuel Ortom, has now banned the practice of open grazing. His argument, we need our land, the water and grass for our farmers.
I know the size of my state and what land is where. To me, there is no 2 hectares of land, that you can put as grazing reserve. So it cannot work here. The whole land is occupied.
Nigeria's agriculture minister, Audu Ogbe, says authorities have long looked the other way when it comes to the conflict between farmers and herdsmen.
I'm sad to tell you that in the last 50 years, until more recently, we may have done a lot for the rice farmer, the cassava farmer, the maize farmer, the cocoa farmer. We haven't done much for the herdsman.
As this struggle for resources continues, it remains to be seen whether the Nigerian government can actually put an end to the crisis.
That report was compiled by Stefan Ellert.
Thank you all for your responses. It's been a pleasure having you aboard. My name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
And bye. Until next time, bye now.
For now.